to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content related to the queer community. I'm Yvonne Crumry, and today I'm speaking with Jace Woodrum. Jace is a senior officer of public opinion insights for the Colorado Health Foundation. He has been analyzing data reported by LGBTQ plus Coloradans on their experiences in economics and housing in the last few years.
So I'll start off by asking, what has your role been in processing the report?
Sure. So I started at the Colorado Health Foundation in November. It was about a month after this report was released and a couple months after the data was collected. It's a telephone poll, and so that means we called up people on the phone, 1,800 of them, and asked them a whole bunch of questions. My role was really after the fact to look underneath the surface. So initially, oftentimes when you release a poll, you release what's called the top line data. Those are the numbers, like how did everyone respond? But beneath the surface, you start looking at how did people who live in rural areas respond differently than people who don't live in rural areas? How did LGBT people respond differently than people who don't identify as LGBT? So I came in and took all the data that we had and started looking below the surface, beyond the top lines, and discovered that there were some pretty interesting differences between LGBT Coloradans and their peers.
So to clarify, were you doing the deeper analysis for just LGBTQ people, or are you looking at different demographic groups as well?
We looked at all demographic groups that we had statistically significant data for. So we were able to look at people of color, people living in rural areas, LGBT people, and people who live on low incomes. We have a separate report that's just specifically on the experiences of folks living on low income.
Why do we specifically separate LGBTQ plus people?
Sure. There is a real lack of data on LGBT people, and specifically on LGBT Coloradans. Far too few surveys ask people about their sexual orientation or gender identity, and there is a lack of standardization in how we ask, so we can't look at data consistently. And without data that helps us understand the experiences of people, it's hard to understand what people's feelings and beliefs are, their opinions are, and certainly hard to advocate for action, because if this data shows that there's an inequity present, that there are disparities between LGBT people and their counterparts, and we wouldn't know that if we didn't have some sort of data. We would just know, my friend Bob had this experience, a really hard time. He was evicted and he doesn't have a place to live, but now we have real numbers that help us see there is inequity here.
So we're starting to get that more data-driven, like qualitative, quantitative information to supplement these anecdotes that people in the community have always known and heard.
I think, yes, we are starting to see more. We need even more. Our friends at One Colorado have a recent survey. Out Boulder has a recent survey. So yes, we are seeing more data being collected about LGBT people, but not nearly enough. And we certainly need more folks who aren't advocating for LGBT people to begin asking these questions as well.
What trends in economy and housing do you see in the LGBTQ community versus the population as a whole?
What we know from this data is that LGBT people are having a different experience when it comes to the economy and housing as compared to people who don't identify as LGBT. So, for example, we all know that Colorado is facing a housing crisis. News every day has something about not enough affordable housing in every community in the state, essentially. But what most people don't realize is that it's hitting LGBT people harder than others. So, for example, 7 in 10 LGBT Coloradans say it's gotten harder to afford their rent or their mortgage. That's compared to 5 out of 10 of people who don't identify as LGBT. And LGBT Coloradans are twice as likely to feel worried that they might lose their homes because of an inability to afford the monthly rent or mortgage. So twice as likely, that's 58% of LGBT Coloradans might be homeless. They are worried about losing their home in the next year. So this is like a present concern. It's not like in my lifetime I've been worried. It's in the next year I might not be able to afford a roof over my head. And it's more than two times as likely to say that if you're LGBT. So what we know here is that there is real inequity. And for us, that's not acceptable. And it's a real call to action.
I am really curious, why is it that we see that disparity? Why is that 20% increase happening? Why is that doubling happening in the data for LGBTQ people?
That's what's hard about data like this, is that it doesn't tell us why, and it doesn't tell us what to do about it, right? It only shows us that there is an inequity. And so for us, we're asking ourselves, what do we do from here? We don't know why. We don't know what to do about it. And so our plan at the Colorado Health Foundation is more research that digs deeper. We keep our finger on the pulse of policies that are impacting quality of life issues. My colleagues at the foundation spend nearly half their time in communities from La Junta to Craig, talking to community members and listening so we can understand, why is this happening? What can we do to address it?
What answers have you encountered when people are going out and speaking to members of the community and asking these questions?
You know, I think it's not going to be a surprise that there are some things happening in the environment that may contribute to this. So, for example, right now, the Trump administration is trying to roll back healthcare protections for transgender people. So these are protections that were built into the Affordable Care Act and meant to ensure that transgender folks could get the care they need without facing discrimination. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is pushing for a rule that would allow taxpayer-funded shelters, homeless shelters, to turn away transgender people experiencing homelessness. So as a transgender person myself, these proposals, they make me feel unsafe. And I suspect, of course, the data doesn't go into this, but I suspect, it's proposals like this that empower those who don't want to serve transgender people, who don't want to treat LGBT people fairly. So again, the data doesn't tell us why people are experiencing this, but we can look at the environment and, you know, have some ideas, because there are real attacks on equality, fairness for LGBT people.
So you mentioned that these legislative proposals and these actions are specifically targeting the trans members of the LGBTQ community. And I'm wondering, are you able to see how that shows up in the data? How people who are trans identify more problems in their life than people who are in the lesbian, bisexual, gay, pansexual area of Colorado?
In this survey, we were not able to separate transgender people from lesbian, gay, and bisexual people simply because we didn't have enough transgender people answer the survey. There is useful data out there from the National Center for Transgender Equality that gives a really in-depth look at the experiences of transgender people. I will say the proposals that are coming from the Trump administration, these are regulatory changes. They don't go through Congress. And so what's hard about that is that there is not a lot of light shown upon these sorts of attacks, because they're not being debated, really. You are allowed to submit comments. We are submitting comments to try to stop these from happening. But it is what makes me really nervous about it is I think many members of the LGBT community probably don't know that these threats are really even happening.
Would you say that's because they're sort of under news radars? Would you say it's because of apathy? Where do you think that issue is arising, where many members of the LGBTQ community don't notice, especially here in Colorado?
Mm-hmm. I think regulatory change is more under the radar for all of us, everyday people and news organizations. You know, when the Department of Health and Human Services, you know, at the federal level, they're changing rules and regulations all the time, and it's difficult for any of us to really track it all. And we may have congressional reporters who are covering what's happening in Congress, and we have White House reporters, but who covers these administrative agencies, mm-hmm. and who can keep up with all of the changes that are happening? Additionally, there are a lot of challenges and attacks and threats at the federal level on folks who are undocumented, on asylum seekers. There are concerns about the census. There's so much coming at the federal level that it's hard for anyone to really keep their finger on all of it.
Absolutely. I've heard it described as like oversaturation of oppression. It's very hard to throw ourselves at every issue fully that we want to, which is, I think, why it's so important that there's people like you in the data on specific issues in specific places drawing attention, because I think that specialization is especially important at times like these.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, every data set has limitations. You know, data is power. I fully believe that, and we need it to serve as a call to action for us. But this data does have limitations. For example, we couldn't look specifically at transgender people. We also couldn't look at the intersections of people's identities. So we weren't able to look at the experiences of LGBT people of color compared to LGBT mm-hmm. white people, or LGBT people who are living on lower incomes compared to those who have more wealth. And I suspect if we were able to dig deeper in the data that way, we would see even more inequity emerge just from what we've seen otherwise, that the experiences of people of color and people who live on low incomes are, you know, they are facing dramatic inequities. And I think the same, it can be said for LGBT people of color, that we certainly don't have the data in this data set.
In the future, moving forward, how do you hope to gather enough data to differentiate between these groups?
It is a commitment of ours to keep doing research, and not just this kind of research. So like I said, this is a telephone poll that was, you know, calling people. You spend 15 minutes on the phone with them and you never get to that why. We also want to do research that helps us get to the why. Focus groups or online surveys that help us understand more deeply people's mindsets and their values and their fears, and that includes LGBT people. To really research LGBT people, you have to be committed to it, particularly transgender people, because they're such a small percentage of the population. We are very committed to that, and I suspect we'll do polling like this on a somewhat regular basis so that we can track over time some changes that we begin to see. And we want to be able to see if we're making any progress, if the experiences of LGBT people are getting better or getting worse.
Going back to the economy and housing focus of this report, what kinds of questions do you ask about economy and what kind of answers are provided?
Sure. So we asked people about their perception of the economy and the job market. Is it getting better or getting worse? And a majority of Coloradans said that it was getting better. But 29% of LGBT people said the economy and the job market is getting worse. And that's compared to only 16% of folks who don't identify as LGBT. So we're seeing, even on a, you know, Colorado's economy seems to be one of the strongest in the nation. There's lots of media around that. We have low unemployment numbers, but that prosperity doesn't seem to be experienced by all of us. And in this case, you know, 29% of LGBT people say, hey, things are getting worse. More than 4 in 10 LGBT Coloradans say they're worse off financially than a year ago. That's compared to 25% of people who aren't LGBT, right? So their prospects aren't getting better economically. And then half of LGBT Coloradans say it's gotten harder to afford food compared to 35% of folks who don't identify as LGBT. So we don't typically think about hunger or the economy or affordable housing as an LGBT issue, but it's clear that they are. And I think part of the reason we don't think about the economy specifically is in popular culture, you know, the picture that is painted is often a well-to-do white male couple, two gay men, and we don't often see LGBT people of color. We don't often see trans people. Now that is changing. There have been major steps forward, particularly in television, to represent the LGBT community and its diversity and to have more authentic representation. But I think for many people, I often think about my own parents and what their vision is of an LGBT person, and it is often tied to wealth. And when you look at data like this, that shows that LGBT people are struggling to afford food, that they're struggling to keep a roof over their head, that they're worse off financially than they were a year ago, it actually paints a really different picture than what we see in popular culture.
You bring up this, especially, I think, a very Colorado idea of the LGBTQ community. a very modern family kind of couple.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is the image that gets perpetuated in media? Why is that the selected image that we as a community are presented in the world?
You know, I think part of it, it's so important to have LGBT people in power in some ways. And so that's in power, for example, being to elected office, but also who is in power in Hollywood, who are making the pop culture that we all consume. And more we're seeing this change, but the first folks to have power in Hollywood were white gay men. And they were actually pioneers in many ways they fought really hard to get shows like Glee, where you saw younger gay high school kids, then you saw transgender high school kids. And so as we've seen more women, as we've seen transgender people rise to power, both in policymaking and also in pop culture, we are seeing like our limits being pushed, and that's a good thing. I remember my own mother's first experience with a transgender person before I came out was Chaz Bono on Dancing with the Stars. And now there are lots more options that they could see. They're big reality TV consumers. And so they are seeing a lot more, and it is challenging their own notion of what is, quote, normal. And I think that's a good thing. It is challenging all of us in the right ways. It just, most of us would like it to happen a little bit faster, or many of us, maybe not most of us. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. I'm your host, Yvonne Crumry, and I'm speaking with Jace Woodrum of the Colorado Health Foundation about LGBTQ+ Coloradans' experience in Colorado's changing economy.
Continuing with that idea of the ways the LGBTQ community is represented by big forces. We live in a state that has a gay governor, Jared Polis, and we have Brianna Chatone, a state legislator for Colorado. And earlier this year, we passed Jude's Law, which allows people starting next year to change their birth certificates according with their identity. How do we see that disparity in the way Colorado presents itself as a safe haven for LGBTQ people and the data we're seeing here?
It makes me proud of Colorado that we elected the first gay governor. It makes me proud that we have an out transgender legislator. I mean, these are not insignificant because when people rise to roles like this, they're able to push for change just by being their authentic selves. And it's exciting to be living in a state where that change is possible. And Jude's Law is an example of change that is happening because of years, not just those who are in office today, but those who have been in office for years. I think back to my first experience. I moved to Colorado to work at One Colorado and to advocate for civil unions, which seems so passe now, but that's what we were doing in 2010. And I remember folks like Senator Pat Steadman or Mark Ferrandino, who was our first gay speaker of the House. And I often think about like standing on the shoulders of giants and people who have been advocating by being their authentic selves as policymakers. That's not new, and it's nice to see people rise even more, and to, of course, have our first out transgender legislator. Pretty big deal. So what's difficult, right, is the experiences of LGBT people, like everyday people, and the juxtaposition between those who, you know, Governor Polis holding the highest office in the land, or in the state, not in the land, in the state, and LGBT Coloradans who are struggling to pay rent, right? There is a disparity there, and that is simply like the part of the diversity of our community, that not everybody in the LGBT community looks like Governor Polis. Not everybody in the community looks like me. And so We do have a diverse community, and that means we have diverse challenges. And that's why data like this should really serve as a call to action for us to understand what's going on behind these numbers. Why are LGBT people struggling to pay their rent or mortgage? Why are they struggling to afford food? What can we do to help it? And that's one of the reasons why we want to put this data out into the world so that policymakers like Governor Polis and all of our state legislators and folks who work at the county and city level and folks who work in school districts can look at this and say, we need to do something. Because I hope that that's what data calls us to do.
You say people in the community don't always look like Jared Polis, don't always look like you. And I think that's getting at what a huge proportion of this disparity is potentially race and how we see that representation being undermined in the ways our systems, especially in Colorado, work, and how you want to see that in numbers more. You want to see and be able to separate how LGBTQ people of color experience housing and economy. What are some ways that race disparity has shown up in your work before in the past?
The Colorado Health Foundation exists to serve Coloradans who are living on low income and Coloradans who have been historically marginalized and disenfranchised. And that means we have to look at race. People of color in this state have faced countless inequities, and that's what we are really working hard to address. I wish this data helped me to see the differences between LGBT people of color and LGBT people. I know from other data sets, like National Center for Transgender Equality's data, that there are true disparities between LGBT people of color and white LGBT people. And we do need more data like that. I want more data like that, specifically in Colorado, so that we are able to see the difference. People living at the intersection of LGBT identity and race are marginalized and disenfranchised. And I think we see, you know, when you read sort of below the surface here, you're not able to really see, like, I think what you're saying is, like, I would guess that what's going on here is that there's a race element. I think there probably is a race element. Sadly, our numbers aren't able to back up our gut instinct, but it's certainly right to say that people of color are experiencing the world in Colorado in different ways and experiencing disparities. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but certainly on many of these questions, people of color answered differently than white people in ways that revealed more inequities, and particularly these housing questions showed people of color more likely to fear losing their homes, more difficult to afford their rent or mortgage. So yes, people of color did answer differently. And again, I'll say that's people of color, not LGBT people of color.
Throughout this interview, you've mentioned that this data should be a call to action for Coloradans. What actions do you see being necessary to take in the future?
You know, I think first about the problem, and I think about the problem not just in data, but in stories. So I'm transgender, and so I think a lot about transgender people and transgender people living in Colorado trying to navigate a state that is being more accepting, but not nearly fast enough. And so, for example, right, you're 58% of LGBT people. My guess is the number would be higher for transgender people. They're worried they might lose their home in the next year. If they do, where are they going to go? I know of one shelter in Denver, the Dolores Project, that welcomes transgender people. What happens when they're full? What happens if you live in Alamosa or Montrose? That is a scary thought for people, that there is nowhere to go. And so the call to action that I see is we have to focus our energy on those who are experiencing inequities the most. You know, we often talk here about bringing health and reach for Coloradans, because when you have your health, you have everything. And we want everybody to have everything, but we're going to start with those for whom health is the furthest from reach. That is LGBT people. That is people of color. That is people who are living on low incomes. And our call to action is, how do we find solutions that impact those folks? You know, I think about affordable housing, and the affordable housing conversation isn't confined to those who are experiencing the most inequities. As a middle-class person, I had a hard time buying a home, right? But my experience pales in comparison to the experience of those who are actually worried that they might lose their home because they can't afford rent or mortgage, right? And so often the conversation is, people who look like me, middle-class people, gosh, we have to leave the city to go to the suburbs. And we're not talking nearly enough about people who were evicted and didn't get enough notice and ended up on the street because they didn't have a place to go. And those conversations need to change. And I think that's our call to action.
Thank you so much for speaking with me, Jace.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Is there anything else you want to add?
You know, I do want to say, people often ask us as a health foundation, right? The Colorado Health Foundation. Why do you guys think about the economy and housing? What does that have to do with health? And it's important that people know that health is about a lot more than what happens at the doctor's office, that your race, your sexual orientation, your gender identity, how much money you make, if you have a stable place to live, if you can walk safely to a grocery store that has healthy food, all of that impacts your health. And that's why when we think about health, we take a very broad view. It's not just about what happens at the doctor's office. It's about if health is in reach for you. And that does mean you can have a roof over your head. It does mean that you can afford healthy food. It is hard to know what the answers are. You know, none of us know what the answers are. And the reason we've seen, I feel, such rapid change and progress is because things are all happening. Pop culture is changing. Politics are changing. And laws are changing. And it's speeding things up. And yet, when you think about those who are facing the most extreme inequities, it is not fast enough.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins. I'm Yvonne Crumry, and I've been speaking with Jace Woodrum of the Colorado Health Foundation. Jace and I discussed the results of the economy and housing portions of a recent Colorado Health Foundation survey and how LGBTQ plus responders reflected higher levels of economic pressure. For more on today's show and to listen to the recording of this and other Outsources shows, go online to our website at news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. As always, let us know if you have comments or feedback about tonight's show by emailing outsources@kgnu.org. You're listening to Outsources on KGNU, and we'd like to wrap up this week's episode with a look at upcoming events in the queer community. Boulder Pride Fest will take place on Sunday, September 8th this year. The day will be filled with artists, organizations, and activities. There will also be a rainbow run the morning of September 8th. You can find more information on these events at outboulder.org. Be sure to join us next week, Monday at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of Outsources, right here on KGNU. Or listen anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources.